Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today I'm joined by Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph. August isn't generally the hottest month for TV releases, so today Alice will be recommending her pick of documentaries to watch online, and then we'll be looking ahead to the much-anticipated sixth series of the British period drama Downton Abbey, set for release next month in September. That is all ahead here on The Arts Review on Monocle 24. Welcome to the show, Alice. Good to have you with us, as always. Now, we did just mention, August, not necessarily the most dynamic month in sort of TV land, because we're waiting for the big autumn shows, right. The full schedule,
yeah, exactly.
As they would say on the other side of the Atlantic. But I guess, you know, people increasingly are choosing to download things, particularly in holiday season.
Yeah.
I just wondered, are we at a bit of a sea change? It's interesting to talk about maybe how people consume their TV, yeah, as well as what's actually on it. Do you think it's changed beyond all recognition? Mm. Or is it still a bit of a, I guess maybe it's a bit of a mix still.
It's interesting because I still think that actually one thing that is on it, August, that everyone is tuning into in their millions is Great British Bake Off, which we're not discussing, and probably quite rightfully so. But that would suggest that there hasn't been a sea change, because every Wednesday night, you know, social media is taken over by people crying over Pavlovas and things. So
yeah,
that happens. But no, I do think that we've got it all at our fingertips. If we want, you know, there's all these documentaries and films and series, and actually having a bit of a break in programming means that you can catch up on all sorts of gems from the past.
Well, and that leads us very elegantly onto our starting point, because we're going to dip into a few of these sort of documentaries and favourites. And your first pick is actually, I don't know if I saw this in 2011, or I may have caught up later, but it's absolutely brilliant, I thought as well, which is Jiro Dreams of Sushi. So sort of people who are familiar with it will probably be going, ah, oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
But for the uninitiated, perhaps sort of bring them up to speed with this one.
Okay, so Jiro is a sushi chef, and his restaurant, which is called Tsukiyabashi Jiro, is located in a subway station in Tokyo, and it has 3 Michelin stars. And at the time of filming, he is 85. He must be over 90 now. But he is a man who has sacrificed, and he admits his own sacrifice, pretty much everything for this pursuit of perfection in making the most perfect sushi. And it sounds like it would be a documentary for complete foodies, but it's not. It's just incredibly beautiful. And it's basically about one man and his mission. And alongside that, how his heritage and his tradition is being passed down to his sons, who are kind of in shadow of this dogged creation, you know, creativity.
And it's also amazing. I mean, it is that study, but it's also a study of, you know, the pursuit not just of excellence, but of, you know, the frustration of failure. And there's some incredible scenes. We'll talk about it a bit more in a minute. Let's take a little listen, though. This is a clip from Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
今入って仕事してて今年になって完璧だとは思ってないからね。親様がかわいそうだから早く譲ってあげてって。ずっとまあ親さんがやっていければそれでいいんですけれども、そうはいかないですから、いつかは交代しなきゃいけないですから。
Now, Alice, talking to some people who've seen this, they tend to have favourite sequences. And there's an extraordinary sort of story of one of the chefs. I'm not actually sure if it's one of Jiro's sons, my memory fails me. But a chef who's trying to get this sort of egg dish.
Right, right. The omelette dish.
And
yeah,
it's absolutely extraordinary because it's a short lifetime of work just to master this one seemingly unimportant element. And it is the study of, well, I don't know what you call it, obsession almost, isn't
it? Yeah, and I think, you know, just never accepting anything but the absolute best. And on a similar line to that, one of the other chef's apprentices, who are already at the top of their game to even get into this tiny kitchen, tiny subterranean kitchen, is that he spends 2 years even before he's allowed to touch the food, because he's not able to touch the food until he's able to handle, you know, scalding hot towels. And then he's allowed to touch the food, and it takes him 2 years to do that. And then he can go and, you know, spend another 2 years mastering the egg omelette, you know.
It's an extraordinary feat, and it's one of those slightly curious hits where you can imagine it being described, or maybe when they're sort of trying to sell it initially, people saying, yeah, maybe a bit for the food connoisseur, maybe, for the international traveller, possibly. I can't see this having mass appeal, but it for some reason, I don't know, it seems to speak to everyone. I don't know if that's because it's about, because there's a family at the centre, or because yeah. there's a man who a lot of people can empathise with, but it seems to speak to everyone regardless of, you know, language or nationality almost.
Yeah, I think Jiro himself, or Jiro rather, is a really fascinating character, because on one level you do empathise with him and you admire him, but the other level you see that what he's doing to his sons, you know, his 50-year-old son is still working beneath him in this kitchen. And he treats him like he's a little boy, and you learn from Jiro that he was never around as a father figure, and it's such an interesting narrative of a family, as you say, as well.
It's a pretty extraordinary piece of work. That's Jiro, Dreams of Sushi, which is available to watch, recommended by basically everyone, but especially by Alice, on Netflix now. Let's move on, Alice, to your next choice. Paris is Burning. This is a 1991 documentary chronicling the ball culture of New York City and the Latino, African-American, gay and transgender communities in the mid to late 80s. We talked a bit about Jiro. What is it about Paris is Burning that prompts, I don't know, would prompt you to kind of go back and look again?
I just think it's a very controversial documentary, but it was a documentary that, you know, was filmed over 7 years in the mid to late 80s. And when it came out, it exploded to the world this subculture, which had been existing pretty much since the 1920s. And that is a subculture of Latino and African-American, gay and transgender people, mostly men, or entirely men, pretty much. And the culture of going out and dressing up and allowing their imagination to overcome their poverty and the prejudice against them. This was a gateway documentary, which also inspired all sorts of things that we take for granted now, you know, things like RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff like that. It was just so incredibly important.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because obviously a lot of these sort of classic docs, you know, they're very well executed, they tell the story in a compelling way, but often they seem to tap into something bigger, and that's certainly the case with Paris is Burning, because it's, I don't know, it seemed to sort of sum up, yeah, as you say, even more than a whole generation almost.
Right.
It was a whole untold story, I guess, that had been in that city for a long time.
Exactly. And obviously at the time it tapped into voguing, which is the kind of the way of club dancing, very elaborate theatrical, which Madonna picked up on in Vogue, you know, around the same time. I think it came kind of at the end of the AIDS crisis. It showed a lot about the violence and homicide rates around transgender people, which are still ongoing. And it's just incredibly important.
Let's refresh memories introduce people to a bit of this. If they haven't seen it before, this is from Paris is Burning. Let's take a listen.
You have space to do all that you intend to. Now, the categories are Butch Queen 1 through 17, and for the girls 18 through 30. As far as all of y'all not walking, please realize that we all, at one time or another, have lusted to walk a ballroom floor. So give the patrons and the contestants, you know, a round of applause for nerve. Because with your vicious motherfuckers, it do take nerve. Believe me, we're not going to be shady, just fierce.
So tell us a little bit more about the story that's told then. Is it sort of zeroing in on, you know, particular stories, particularly individuals, or is it about just catching a sense of a moment, maybe more than anything else?
No, it's what Jenny Livingston did, that's a documentary maker. And the interesting thing with her is that she made this after one summer school of learning how to, you know, a filmmaker's summer school. So she wasn't professional, she wasn't a student, and she was gay herself, but she immersed herself in this, you know, this landscape. And so the documentary is made up of scenes like what we've just heard within the clubs, and also these monologues with the kind of the five or six key members, the drag queens and the transgender, you know, women who were involved in it. And so you hear their stories, you hear where they've come from, you hear how they have to live, basically.
That's Paris is Burning, which is available to watch online now. Another highly recommended. Here on The Arts Review, let's, this is quite a pronounced change of pace and direction. Because Alice, we're going to talk a little bit about the return of Downton Abbey. We're getting a few sort of reviews of the first episode trickling in. Maybe bring the listeners up to speed. There's probably not enough time to do a plotted history for the uninitiated. No. But where were we left at the end of the fifth series?
We were left in the mid-1920s, so 1924. And as you say, we're not going to recap on all of the characters. There's the same sort of Downton drama going on along the Ruffles and the pot pans and the upstairs downstairs culture. There's the, you know, there's an unsolved murder going on. We're on the cusp of women's emancipation. So, you know, as with every Downton series, there's the small dramas, but they're set across this big historical landscape of real life events that are going on.
Now, we know that the sixth season is going to be the last.
Right.
I always find that rather interesting when the, you know, whoever it is, the money men or the writers or the creative team, the actors in some cases, decide this is about right. This has run its course. Do you think Downton's at a point where this is probably on balance the right time to be sort of bringing that curtain down?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, Crikey. I think a lot of us were sort of, certainly in the UK, we were all sort of thinking that maybe Series 5 would be the last. The interesting thing with Downton is that while its appeal has potentially waned over the last couple of seasons in the UK, internationally and especially in America, it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Does that, I mean, has that surprised you at all? Because obviously there's always been a slight, you know, transatlantic interest in these sort of these peculiarities, the esoteric nature of, you know, the British upper classes, this sort of thing, particularly if it's all done in, you know, the right kind of frocks and suits. But the degree of enthusiasm seems to have taken some by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's the stuff that really surprises me is not necessarily the viewing public, but perhaps the critical acclaim. I mean, it's still Emmy nominated every single year, long after we're kind of like, oh, really? You know, that's what's so amazing about it is that Julian Fellowes and his cast are still getting all these award nominations. I think maybe Season 5 reignited and Season 4 reignited interest over there because suddenly the Americans were coming and there are a few American characters in as well.
Now, some of these big sort of landmark series, they bid their farewells on the small screen, but lo, they return again on the silver screen. I mean, could we see that happening, do you think?
It has been rumoured.
Downton
colon the movie has been rumoured, and it wouldn't surprise me at all.
It wouldn't surprise you? Would it appall you on some level, or would you think
quite possibly
it could be a welcome house guest potentially?
I just don't think we need any more period movies, do we? The one thing that is definitely coming though, and it feels a little bit like Downton is dead, long live Downton, is that Julian Fellowes is writing an American version, well, an American equivalent. It's set a little earlier. It's set in the turn of the 19th century, but or the late 19th century. It's called The Gilded Age. It's all about American rich people. So, you know.
Well, that kind of leads, because I was going to ask you what fills the void, what kind of eases into that vacuum. And basically it's kind of the same thing,
the same
with Julian Fellowes at the helm. What else though? Because it is funny that you get those hits, unlikely or likely as they may be, that seem to just speak to, you know, the common consciousness for whatever reason. Do you see some other things knocking around that could sort of step into the Downton shoe, the well-polished Downton shoes?
I mean, Poldark comes to mind. That was Aidan Turner's sort of shining moment earlier this year. Kind of sexy long-haired man with a scythe in Cornwall.
What's not to enjoy?
Yeah, and I can definitely see not only a second season, I mean, that was a runaway success over here. I can see that doing quite well internationally. And I dare say a second season for more scything ahead.
Exactly. Can't have enough scything. That's what you need to look out for. We can all look forward to Downton Abbey returning to our screens this September, and that brings us neatly to the end of today's show. Thanks very much to our guest, Alice Vincent. As always, Alice, great to speak with you. This has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks to our producer, Holly Fisher, and researcher, Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We're back at the same time tomorrow. Book review on the agenda then. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.